My name is Sam Warburton, and in my opinion, the greatest injustices in modern day sport are that David Flatman was never picked for the Lions. I can't say this, boys.
Read it, Sam. Read it, okay?
And that Thomas George Llewellyn Shanklin wasn't Wales captain instead of me.
So hard, was it? Carry on.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Flats and Shanks. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, one and all, to episode 2, series 3 of the Flats and Shanks podcast. I am Tom of the Shanklins clan.
I'm David of the Flatmen.
Yeah, strange name that.
I always assumed it was Jewish. I don't think it is.
You're related to pancakes.
Something funny was going to come out of that, wasn't it? Man of the Flats. I think my ancestors were East Anglia-based landowners.
Eastern European.
Yeah, something possibly. Like that.
I'm sorry about a little bit of music there. Did you put that on purpose?
It's just what I got going on at the moment. It's just what I'm into at the moment. Okay, it's a bit of aggressive, explicit lyrics, R&B, because ain't nothing wrong, yeah.
And then you mix that with some of the books that you're reading right now.
Yeah,
just tweet those about. They look really good. What were they?
Didn't tweet about them.
You did. You put it on Facebook.
No, I didn't.
Oh, did you not?
Instagram, Tom.
Instagram, that's it. What were they? What were the books?
Historian, Shadow of the Wind, really nice.
Have you actually read them? Or
yeah.
You just
making it up.
You're just tweeting it to sound...
sound clever, yeah. Yeah, I do that all the time. I just do stuff to sound, to try to be cool. Even though I don't want to do it.
How are you, boy?
Yeah, I'm all right, fella. How are you?
Sat in your car, westbound, Lee Delamere Services.
Lee Deli.
Looks like you're moving house. All the kit in the back. You've got boxes. You got your bin liner jacket.
Yeah.
You've not been home for a while, have you?
This is a sports utility vehicle. I'm on the verge of going to the tip with a car full... Seats flat back down flat, aren't they? And I'm on the verge of going to the tip with a car full of cardboard, but I haven't quite been yet. So I keep doing these really long journeys with creaking cardboard behind me. It's really annoying.
Do you love a tip run because it's just a bit of me time?
Mate.
You get 20, 30 minutes on your own.
Mate. Yeah, but it's not for me because I take the kids. The kids love going to the tip.
Just have a play, do they? Like, kids, go find me some plastic or
find some
aluminium.
Find me some glass. Yeah. So I take them. It's my version of a day out. You know, you've heard of McDonald's dads, which is dads that look after their kids and take them straight to McDonald's. I go to McDonald's via the tip. And sometimes... Argos, because it's next door. So it's quite the day out, and simple things please kids. They don't need to be in Barbados necessarily.
They don't need Fortnite, do they?
They don't need it, do they? I don't even know what Fortnite is. I've heard loads of people talking about it. It's a computer game, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a computer game. I don't actually know what it does. I think you just shoot people, basically, and you're a character.
Is it a shoot 'em up?
Yeah. It's not like Worms. Do you remember Worm? Are you really... I can't imagine you've been into computer games, though.
Well, funny you should mention that, Tom. I won a regional competition in Crystal Palace.
For Worms?
Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
Did you really?
On the SNES.
Super Nintendo.
Street Fighter 2 Turbo. Turbo just made it like double quick, but that was... I used to be able to complete it on expert mode without conceding a shot.
I was never allowed like a Mega Drive or anything like that. I was too busy playing sport, you know, climbing trees, making bow and arrows.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, I did get an original PlayStation before, and I loved Tekken. Remember Tekken?
Yeah, I did.
PlayStation 1?
Never played it.
That and Journal Only Rugby. But yeah, I know.
When everyone had games, was it Game Boys?
I
got a Sega Mega... Is it a Sega Mega Drive?
Yep.
The handheld things?
Ooh. No, a Mega Drive was what you plugged into computer.
Yeah, what was the thing I had? A Sega... Someone will know.
Okay.
I had a game on it called Rygar. And I was trying...
A Game Gear?
Game Gear. Could have been a Game Gear. A game called Rygar. Couldn't complete it. Kept getting to level 23, whatever it was, the final level, and losing. Then my sister's friend, Angela, came round. Angela Benoit. She came round. Angela's like, how do you play on this, Dave? I was like, I used to do this and do this. She's like, oh, right. Half an hour later, she's like, oh, I think I've completed it. The final boss, I couldn't do. She did it. Didn't take her any time at all. Never forgiven her for that. She humiliated me in front of my family. I can't even say it. That's what the memory has done to me.
You'll never beat Super Mario Kart anyway.
Street Fighter 2 Turbo. SF2 Turbo. I'm drinking a coffee that Tom's got for me in got into my car. And Tommy, what is it?
It's a coconut flat white from Costa. You can get it all other leading coffee shops, but Costa apparently do the best coconut flat white. That's coming from mate Bubs, who's intolerant to everything now.
Yeah.
Except when he doesn't.
Including immigration.
Including Brexit.
The thing is, mate, to come over here and make you knock off, you right?
But I've, you know, like with our lives and stuff, you sometimes get sponsorship deals because we do TV stuff and pods and whatever.
Yes, you do.
And there's this sponsor and that sponsor, and that's fine, and they're lovely people. I often think one of the sponsor link up sponsorship deals.
Petrol.
That could save me the most money is Costa, because I buy so many Costa Express coffees from those machines. I might actually just try and install one in my car. It's insane. I buy at least 75 a day. Don't exaggerate. 700, 800 a month.
Okay, so not petrol, Costa.
Yeah, I mean,
we want fuel cards.
I'm very, very lucky to have the car that I have, but I filled it up this morning. But having said that, I hadn't filled it up since yesterday morning. So, to be fair, I've driven a long way. I drove Bath to Sale Sharks and back, and I've just driven Bath to Crawley and back, and tomorrow I'm driving Bath to South Devon and back. So I'm doing some pretty punchy mileage.
What have you been up to this week?
Mate. Who is it that hated us saying mate all the time, that we do it all the time?
Michelle.
What's I been up to? It's been reasonably quiet, because it's one of those things where you're like, back to it, eh? You're back to it now. The holidays are over. Season started. And yeah, I am back to it. But
back to CrossFit, are you? CrossFit Bath.
I did a bit of CrossFit, a bit of Fatness First. There is a new gym. A couple of new gyms opening in Bath, which I'm going to...
A couple?
...try out. Yeah, they look quite nice. I'm not into nice gyms. That's the point. I want to get in... I like...
Spit and sawdust,
or
do you like having like an area to yourself where you can do your deadlifts, your squats, your cleans, a couple of down and ups if you want?
Yeah, I like that, but I also like a gym. I actually like big gyms because they're big enough that you don't have to wait for equipment, which is boring for everyone. But also, you're not if it's a tiny gym, it's a little bespoke, cool one. 10 people in there, you have to talk to the trainers because there's no one else in there.
But you're not doing...
I want to be on my own.
Cable pull-ins and...
Yeah.
Oh, you do you?
Yeah.
All right. Use machines, not
use
just...
Use machines, yeah.
Power lifting.
No, machines too.
Okay.
Trying to do a bit less power lifting stuff.
They're taking over the world, aren't they, machines?
Because it's... I'm not convinced it's good for me. What have I been up to, Tom? It's a great question.
Well, that's enough, mate. I had a baby.
It's one I intend to...
I had a baby on Tuesday.
Anyway, it's one I intend to answer. So last Wednesday...
A human baby.
I went to a dinner in Cheltenham. Jill Douglas asked if I would go, and I said, you know what, I bloody will. We're still talking about me, aren't we?
Yeah.
All right. Don't ask the question, and then...
I thought you'd finished, that was all.
Do you want to talk about your baby, then?
No. Jill Douglas...
invited me to this dinner, her kids' rugby club, and loads of people there. Nolly was there, Nicky Robbo was there, Nicky Robinson.
Yeah, lives up there, doesn't
he? Ben Vellacott, Tom Hudson were there from Gloucester, David Humphreys, and Johan Ackerman were there. He is a unit, I always forget, he's an absolute unit. He's not just tall, he is a big man.
Properly thick set as well.
Huge guy.
Not like he's needed loads of conditioning and weights to put that size on, just naturally
thick,
big. Yeah,
big and thick. And Rob Fiddler was there, along with his dad. I got into Fids a bit when
is
I got up on the mic.
Man?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, thought so.
Cello. And he was there, so I got into Fids a bit.
Did you do a Q&A with all of them?
No, Jill Douglas hosted it. And then Wayne Barnes was there. He spoke for 20 minutes, really good. And then did a Q&A with Nolly and Barnsley and Jill.
The breakdown. Protecting the jackler.
But it was good. It was nice. That's the truth of it. And then it was up to blimmin' Sale Sharks.
Sail away,
it,
were you?
It's been pretty Enya. Chilled, actually.
Sail away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This week coming up, it's busy one, boy.
Where are you?
Mate. Do you want me to tell you? Is that
local?
Why you asked?
Local.
Is that why you asked? So yeah, done Crawley today. Blimmin' tomorrow, blimmin' Devon. Race back, because I'm babysitting. Can you babysit your own kids? I'm babysitting.
Don't have to.
Then I'm at a friend's wedding, Wednesday morning in London.
Who gets married on a Wednesday?
Long story. Yeah.
Fine, move on.
And it just goes from there, Tom. And then I'm down at Gloucester against Bristol.
On Sunday.
On Friday night. Sunday I'm at Wasps Leicester. Yeah.
Okay, so you're up in Coventry on Sunday.
I mean, sent to Coventry.
Not as bad as Sale, is it, or Newcastle?
No, it's one of those where I'm in Coventry Sunday till, what is it, 6 or 7, and then I've actually got an 8 a.m. business thing, business breakfast thing in the city on Monday morning, which is reasonably punchy, that.
What, are you going to travel down on Monday morning?
I'll go and stay overnight in London, I think, on the Sunday night.
Yeah.
See who I am.
Yeah.
I'll be all right. I'll be Tom. I'll be absolutely fine. Anyway, you had a baby, have you?
I'm a father.
How did that happen?
I'm not actually sure.
Do you remember the night it...
No, that's the worrying thing. Does look like me, though.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Looks like a baby orangutan.
Yeah, I thought it might be more translucent than it is. He is.
Jaundice, mate. Long may it stay.
Yeah.
Lovely colour on him.
A kill for a bit of jaundice on Made in Chelsea, wouldn't they? That. What's his name?
Theo.
Thea?
Yeah.
Do you like him?
Bloody love him, mate. Mm. Like he's one of my own.
Have you had a chat with him yet?
I talk to him all the time, mate. I do the late feeds. We chat about everything. God. What don't we talk about is easier. But he was born on Tuesday. All good, all fine. Back home now. It's actually a really pleasant experience for a father when the mother has a C-section, because you're not dealing with all the loud noises, all the animal noises, all the hours of labour and the pains. It's quite strange, really, because it takes probably 50 minutes. It takes 10 minutes, really, for the baby to come out, and then the remaining 50 minutes to stitch them back up.
Oh, that's the bit. The best bit. I like all stitches and gory stuff.
You like that film Crash? It's in your top 10, isn't it?
It's your top 10.
But it was quite strange. She was just having a chat with the doctors, just telling inappropriate jokes, and they were loving it. It was just keeping the morale high, and then the baby came out.
Easy as that.
Yeah, well easy done. As that. But obviously then the aftercare, you know, they can't drive for a while.
Is that quite annoying?
Yeah, you know, a little bit, but you know, there wasn't room in the car, so I made a walk home. But
yeah.
It's...
Which can't drive, so...
It's all fine, mate. Just late nights at the moment, but gives me a chance to catch up on Netflix.
Kane and the Netters. What are you watching?
Just finished Ozark Series 2.
Oh, I'm 3 or 4 in.
I liked it. It is quite complicated. You've got to keep watching... Well, you've got to watch it. You can't be going on your phone. It's like, you know, you have to be aware of what's going on because there's always loads of different twists. And
can I say something potentially inappropriate?
Yes.
But natural and honest?
Yes.
I find the woman in that, the mum, the wife, forgotten her name, Wendy.
Yes.
Very attractive.
She was in Love Actually.
Was she?
Yeah.
Redhead?
Yeah.
I find her very physically attractive.
I thought you were going to say the daughter then. I'm glad you didn't.
No, I'm not like that. Can I say, I've said it now.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay. So I finished that. Yep. I'm on the last season.
Is it good then when you finish it?
I liked it.
It wasn't amazing, though.
Can I say it's an open ending?
Ah, so there's Series 3 coming.
Yeah. But at the moment, I'm just finishing off El Chapo. Got one more episode to watch. Have you seen
El
that?
El Chapo. No, not yet. Is it good?
Yeah.
Is it a spin-off from... Or is it just another Pablo Escobar thing?
But it's about El Chapo, which means short in Mexican. It's... yeah, so he's...
Surely it's Chapo. Oh, Chapo's nice. Nicer, and it's more English. Old Chapo. Is it called Old Chapo?
But it is. It is.
Old Chapo.
Yeah, I think it is, actually. Set in Cambridge.
Yeah.
But it's good, though, mate. You know, they talk about Pablo Escobar being the godfather of drug smuggling, and next up is Old Chapo.
But isn't that Old Chapo?
I think he only gets arrested, I think, about a year ago.
Yeah, Pablo Escobar's the guy, so it's like...
But he was... But El Chapo then was smuggling drugs from Colombia to Mexico to...
Weren't we all?
America.
Weren't we all?
To the US.
But it's like Usain Bolt's the number one of all time. I don't want to sit down and watch a whole series about Asafa Powell. I just want to watch one on the best guy and then move on to something else.
Yeah. It's good, though.
Is it good?
Yeah,
okay.
I really enjoyed it.
Narcos is really good.
Narcos is really good, but El Chapo is good. He was in Forbes, I don't know, top 20 of richest men and most influential men.
Yeah.
For like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, but
where's he now?
Could he
pop down the shop for a cup of tea without thinking someone's going to smoke him. I'd rather have less money and be able to go down realistically to Waitrose if I had the choice, but if I'm on a budget, Saners.
On a budget is probably Asda or Lidl.
Sainsbury's is reasonably priced, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty decent, Sainsbury's.
Yeah, I like Sainsbury's, but Waitrose is a much nicer experience.
You'd never go to Asda, would you? Or Lidl?
Yeah.
Do you know what they are?
Yeah. There is no Asda that's convenient for me. We went to Asda all the time when we were younger, you and me. Damn in Bath.
No, we didn't. We went to the Co-op. We had a Co-op below us, didn't we?
No. We used to go to the big Asda in Southgate. We used to go. Remember where you debagged me?
Yeah. And you weighed on the scales and got your height. I remember now.
Yeah. Yeah, and it said I was 5'3".
Yeah, but you had to eat organic. I remember that.
But Waitrose is a nicer experience. And it's like, oh, don't need an experience. Okay, fine. I'm okay. I don't need anyone else to need it. But it's like a luxury car. Why pay extra for a car that's more luxurious? Gets you A to B. Fine. I don't care. It's like, I don't care if you don't spend money on luxuries because you don't find that luxurious. I like going to Waitrose. It is much more pleasurable. However, it does feel unnecessarily expensive, so I don't shop there very often because I feel like I'm maybe getting a bit done over.
I'm with you there, fella. I do like a Waitrose shop.
Lovely, isn't it?
On a weekend.
But they've got lovely, like, a little coffee shop, and they've got lovely fresh almond croissants and stuff in the mornings. It's like, oh, this is so nice. Such nice gears in there, you know?
So, yeah, I've been properly enjoying the late night feeds.
Yeah, what I'm worried about, though, Tommy, is that you're not going to bed and getting back up again. You are staying awake, because what's the point in going to bed? But I wonder, a month from now, you'll have given up about 45 hours of sleep.
Oh, I'll be gone, mate. I moved out.
And you look like even more like, what's his name? Who's the one you look like? Voldemort.
Well, yeah.
You're emptying yourself. That's what I'm worried about. I say worried. Couldn't give a shit.
You're not allowed to swear.
Sorry. Beep it out, will you?
Yeah, of course I will.
I just felt like that wouldn't be as good. What do you want to do with your seat? Do you want to chill it?
No, I thought you were. I thought I had my seat warmer on. So that's been keeping me busy this week. I went to the Dragons Southern Kings on Saturday.
Oh, you did it with Jacko, didn't you?
With Ed Jackson, first time I met him. I'm not sure if he listens to the podcast.
Oh, of course he listens to it, mate. He's got nothing else to do.
But you're right, mate.
Except nick our jobs.
Incredibly good looking.
Oh yeah, but answer me this, right? I hope he listens to this, right? Answer me this, Tommy. If Jacko hadn't jumped in a pool and broken his neck, would he be commentating on telly?
He wouldn't, but he's very honest about that, and
it's a joke.
He's got more awards for breaking his neck and recovering than he ever has for rugby. He calls it the cripple cabinet.
Does he?
Yes.
I hope the doctors have got awards too, because they're the ones that have really done it.
What was the hardest thing though? And you'll have witnessed this, because you're pitch side pre-game.
Yeah.
You have a break and then the game starts.
Yeah.
He's got to walk pitch side all the way to the gantry on the other side of the field.
With a gangster lean on.
With a gangster lean on.
Yeah.
To get up there in time.
And by the way, if anyone's going to think about emailing in or tweeting us or whatever that we're being disrespectful to Jacko, we agree, don't we? We are.
Yeah.
Completely disrespectful. It's not right. But we're also not bothered.
But that's also the environment that we're in.
Yeah. He's a great fella, Jacko. Yeah. And
you find a weakness, you pick on it.
He called me and said, I've got a bit of TV work, like some tips, yeah, to have a chat about it. And I called him back with some tips. And really all he was ringing for was just sort of celebrate the fact that he was getting TV work while I was at home watching, and he was earning while I was watching on telly, and he wanted to rub it in because he's basically stealing my life now.
Really good though, really natural. You could tell he wasn't nervous. Just a real nice chat in the opening scene of just what he's up to and the charity work he's doing.
Jokes aside, if you had been through what Jacko has been through, could you ever be nervous again?
I don't think you could. He's done a lot of public speaking now, which is really good, because he's got a great story.
He's such a relaxed dude, isn't he?
And he says he feels incredibly lucky. You know, how can you feel incredibly lucky about breaking a neck? But he said, you know, what could have happened?
Well, look at the work it's got him. And that's what he means.
Yeah, very true. But you look at potentially where you could be, breaking your neck, not being able to walk again, not being able to stand up. But he's got all these things. He's doing challenges. He's doing I think he might be over in France now doing
his wife's a legend as well.
Mountain walk.
His wife's lovely, beautiful, lovely, took amazing care of him. So yeah, he is in very, very, in many ways very, very lucky. But he did problem with Jacko is he's also a thief, and if you rob a bank, you're a thief. And then if you get caught and give the money back, are you suddenly not a thief? He stole something from me that I lent to him in good faith at a charity event. And after I rumble him, I think on this podcast or on Twitter or something, and I question him and say, why have you done this to me after I've been nothing but a friend? Admittedly, I only want to be his friend since he got famous because he broke his neck. Yeah. Before that, I couldn't give a toss what he was doing, to be honest. He steals it from me. I out him. And suddenly it comes back through my letterbox by magic with a 1 kilo bar of dairy milk. So is he suddenly not a thief?
I'll tell you, if you ask me. I'll tell you who is a thief. The umpire. US Open. Stole a point off Serena Williams.
Don't go.
We'll get into that a bit later.
Don't go there, Tommy.
Or do you want to go there now, mate?
Let's go there. What's your view?
My view. I've got two views.
If you say banging the old feminist drum, you're afraid you've got to get out of my car. Right. My car, by the way.
As the law stand, I think it was the correct decision.
Letter of the law, Tom.
The coach is blatantly giving her coaching advice with his hand signals. You're not allowed to do that, and it's a warning. She then smashes a racket on the floor. That is a second warning, which means you've got to dock a point. Now, that's what really upset her, because she's saying that he stole a point from her. Now, she knows the fact that if she slams a racket on the floor, she's already been given a warning, he's going to dock her a point. So she knows what's coming. Now, it was only since the point was taken away from her that she really kicked off. I think the umpire, what was his name? Roman?
Steve?
Jobs.
Dickie Bird. Was it Dickie Bird?
I think he could have dealt with it better, because she's taken it personal that he's deemed her cheating. You know, the sanction is against her coach. And I know it reflects on a player, but, you know, whether she saw it or not, that's always going to be the law. You know, if your coach in the box is giving you hand signals for in a form of coaching, that's a warning.
But the coach knows that the points are docked from the player,
exactly,
not the coach.
Exactly. But she's taking that personally. Now, you don't often see these warnings and points docking given, especially in such a big game like the Grand Slam final. It's like rugby league and getting done for feeding in a World Cup final. You know, very, very rarely does that happen. But
I think my mum should have got done for feeding. Anyway.
Grooming. But but she's full of emotion, isn't it? Now I get
thinking of more feeding things here. I've got to stop.
Sexism I don't really get.
Is your mum still feeding that pony in the village on Sundays?
we're trying to have a serious conversation. Right.
Someone's got to feed the pony on a Sunday, haven't they?
I'm sweating now.
Me too.
Oh, so hot. But she's turned it into a massive... And the whole sexism thing in tennis is a total different argument about how men get away with more than women. She's probably got a point. But, you know, you can't be disrespectful to umpires. No matter if you agree with them or not, they're there to do the job. You have to have that... you have to have respect in sport. And all sports are trying to clamp down on talking back to umpires. She's calling him a thief. She's being quite aggressive towards him. He docks her a game. And I think, for me, that was the right decision. And it just takes away the shine of how good Naomi Osaka was.
Mm.
But what I will say is Serena Williams dealt very well with it at the end when the awards were being given. There was a lot of boos going on. She quieted the crowd down and gave thanks to Naomi and said she deserved the win.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, isn't it? It depends what you call interesting. But
people are torn. People are torn on social media about it.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? And talk for a minute, Tommy. Talk about it for a minute, because I'm trying to find something that I think it might be relevant on my phone. I won't be long.
It's not the first time either that she's been aggressive to umpires, particularly female umpires as well. She's been banned before, and you know, people talk about John McEnroe and how he talked back to him, but that, it's a total different era. You know, that would never happen in this day and age. There's been other male tennis players that have argued with umpires, and potentially they may have gone away with it. But what it will do now is the bar has been set about what you can and cannot say to an umpire. And it's very much like that Sam Warburton tackle in the World Cup in the semi-final against France. You know, a lot of people saying that wasn't a red card, it should never be a red card. No one's been given a red card for that before. But after that, any tackle that was similar or worse than Warburton on Vincent Clerc was a automatic red card. And I think you'll see that through tennis now. So it sounds bad, but I think it is good for the game that this incident has happened.
So, okay.
We've just searched on your phone for someone else's opinion and you're going
to
give it
now.
Who was
I trying to find? No, someone sums it up really well. No. Ben Durs, always. Great name.
Great name, isn't it?
He knows. He knows. Ben Durs, former BBC, but does his own stuff now. I often like his opinions on things because they're pretty no-nonsense. He says, I love this argument that Serena Williams is some kind of feminist role model for behaving like a man would. Anyone who speaks to an umpire like that is an unpleasant prick, male or female. I also love the argument that when sportsmen go mental, they're given a pass, but when sportswomen go mental, they're hated for it. Most people I know think Nick Kyrgios is a complete moron. It's true, like the whole John... We celebrated John McEnroe, and saying it was a different time makes it sound like we're talking about Jimmy Savile. We're not. It's like... But it is... different time. No one is allowed to talk to umpires like that, and all sportsmen and women at elite level are on the edge a lot. They're on the edge, a huge amount of pressure, physical, psychological, environmental, financial, all that stuff. You might argue she's not under financial pressure, but I bet you not winning cost her a lot of money, so there's a lot thrown in. She's also had a tougher life than a lot of people and probably had to fight a lot harder to get where she is than you and I have to get into the front seat of this car at Lee Delhi, right? So take all that into account. But you have to remember that you are a role model. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone cocks up. She went way too far. Just like the footballers who can't resist taking their shirt off even though they know it's a yellow card when they've scored. It's ridiculous. I think she behaved awfully.
So you're talking about all the troubles that she's gone through. That's a different argument for a different time. That's not something you bring up in the middle of a US Open Grand Slam final. I'm sure, valid points.
Yep.
But there's times and places that you address.
What I mean is that her reaction to
was
feeling
pure emotional.
No, but her reaction to feeling persecuted might trigger different chemical reactions and different memories from your reaction to being persecuted, because in your life you've been persecuted very, very little, as have I, because we're very privileged. Now, she's been persecuted a lot from a young age, so she's wonderful and dominant and fantastic and a role model, not just for women around the world, but for men around the world too. She's a phenomenon, but she's struggled and been persecuted a lot more and victimised and picked on a lot more. So when she feels like that's happening to her, which probably doesn't happen a lot anymore because she's rich, famous superstar, it may well trigger things from her past that cause explosive reactions. Now, I think that she behaved awfully, but I think you're right in a sense that it's good that no one's going to be allowed to do that again. I think it's right that she's docked a game. She knew what was coming, but to expect elite sportsmen and women to always, always be clear and rational about their behaviour when they're at the limit and under that amount of pressure is unrealistic. Doesn't excuse it, but whether she likes it or not, and I think she likes it, she's a role model for lots and lots of people, primarily kids. Well, not primarily, in this instance, most sort of importantly, kids that play tennis. So just like this footballer who dives, that footballer who abuses a referee, kids copy what the pros do. We know that. We see it all the time in all different sports. That is one of the reasons rugby clamps down so hard on these things, and rightly. If she's allowed to get away with that, whatever the reasons behind it, kids will copy it. So she can't be.
And you always watch tennis and you always see there is normally, mostly, a huge level of respect because a lot of calls don't go your way.
Yeah.
They deal with them, they move on. But anyway, I think we've put that to bed. On a lighter note, how good was the personal hacker for Tia Tuarangi? Excuse my pronunciation.
Hang on. Whose dog?
Yeah.
Tia Tuarangi.
So he gets his first cap for the All Blacks at the weekend against Argentina. I thought Argentina is the best I've seen him look. But
hope,
you know, you
hope
just,
they do that again.
You, yeah, so yeah. Do I. You just can't compete against New Zealand. But he goes into the stand after. We believe it's his father, it's his partner, and his partner's father do a personalised haka for him. And a lot of people talk about, you know, getting death by hakas. This one is just
goosebumps,
absolutely incredible.
Yeah,
you cannot not enjoy it watching it. You cannot not get goosebumps watching it.
Because you see the haka face on, and he is facing the haka. So you can't see him. I wonder, how do you stand there and not bawl your eyes out when something like that's happening? Like, he must have done, or
but
maybe
it's the
did
pure that. Emotion of his, who we think is his partner, his father, and then just the handshakes and the hugs after. It's such a proud moment for him. And you know, I hope people watch that, and I hope, you know, when they see the haka and they think, oh, it's another haka now, and
yeah,
when they go to New Zealand, I hope they realise what it actually means,
yeah,
to New Zealanders,
yeah,
to do it.
Oh, it was brilliant. I absolutely love that.
I saw something on social media. It was the MotoGP, and a guy
called
Romano Fanetti, right, he grabs the brake of another rider when he's going around the outside of him. Mate, it's absolutely incredible.
How do you spell Fanetti?
Fanetti. I'm not sure. Just put MotoGP, grab brake.
Well, I've got... Oh, Fanetti. Oh, you... Okay, grab brake. MotoGP.
Yeah. It is... I mean...
MotoGP brake.
You are now... You know, have your license now, don't you? So, I'm sure...
Oh my God, there's a picture of it. I want to see the video. Video.
I'm sure you can relate to this a lot better than I can, because, you know...
Right, I'm watching it. Here we go.
You're going on about your bike now.
Oh my God, these riders. Oh my God.
Is this a short version? So he's going around the corner.
No, it's a guy nearly coming off. That's the wrong one. Guys, is this good podcasting, guys? You enjoying this? Oh, here it is. Here he goes.
So he's going around the outside.
Oh my God!
Omar. Oh my God.
He's been sacked.
Has he?
But calls remain for a lifetime ban following a life-threatening incident where he grabbed a competitor's brake lever at 140 miles an hour.
Never ever seen
GP.
That before. How can you think, A, that's not going to get picked up on camera, and
I've just retweeted it if you want to look at it. Holy moly.
And B, surely you're going to realise you're going to get banned for that.
Jeepers.
Have you seen the Barcelona incident yet?
No.
Mate, where have you been?
I've been on the road, bro. I'm not like all the other guys that take driven cars. I like to drive my own car everywhere.
You and Ugo are like the best. You, Ugo, and Will Green were like the best social media. Trollers, I know.
I've had a week almost completely off social media this week.
Are you?
Someone just sent me an article saying.
Get some hate mail, are you?
No, I haven't. No. Right, Bastero. This is good. This is good podding, guys. You're all enjoying this. Because we're looking stuff up on our phones.
Go do your research, mate.
Oh, hang on, here we go. Bastero on the floor.
They're calling for a big ban.
Oh. Cheap shot. Bloke's lying, or already lying down on his front. Matteo Bastero translates roughly as Matthew the Bastard.
Mate, it's the third swear word you've had?
The bastard's not a swear word. It's in the dictionary, Chief. Actually, some of the others.
Well, I don't think my kids would like it.
I'll see... I don't want to retweet that. It's not very nice. Can you retweet it? Because I don't care about your account.
No. So yeah, that was great. But what is nice, I know you don't follow cricket, but Alistair Cook, it's his...
Anyway, Bastero's
last game for England. He gets... I don't know what he's finished on with.
Well, hang on. Bastero's getting done, basically.
Yeah,
he is. Yeah, warm up it. Yeah.
Yeah, but big shout out to Alistair Cook. I know he listens to the podcast.
See you tonight, Cookie. Big one tonight, fella.
Fresh on a high.
God, I'm going to get bloody lashed tonight, me and Cookie. I'm not... I like cricket, but I don't know a lot about it. But I've always thought he was a very...
Humble.
Dignified, polite, skillful, committed batsman.
Left-handed batsman.
I've always thought he was a great batsman, actually. I've always enjoyed watching him. But he's one of my faves. Are you happy with that? And my synopsis of his career? Well done, Cookie.
Break.
Right, guys, this is the rugby section for you to all flick through, fast forward through, because we know none of you... likes it. You all just like the rambling. That's what our feedback told us, isn't it?
Yeah, legally we have to do it, unfortunately.
Legally, to call it a rugby podcast, got to talk about rugby. So, Friday night,
Northampton Harlequins, isn't it?
Saints against Quins. Two of the old-timers on that classic match. It wasn't actually that good. It's funny, so Max Leheath from Bath tweeted that he didn't know if he liked the Quins shorts, the grey away shorts. It's funny he said that, because I was looking at those shorts a lot during the game, and I actually think that the colour and fit of them really suits a man, the heavier quadded man. So like Danny Kerr, I said on Twitter, I think it really made Danny Kerr's quads pop. So did the fact that he clearly shaves his legs and has got a great tan and he's muscular. His legs looked amazing in those shorts, and he replied, they really do, he agrees. So I think Max has been had his question answered there. He's sort of been sartorially overruled.
Yeah, smaller people do have, a lot of them have larger legs anyway.
More definition.
Yeah.
Because they're little, aren't they?
Yeah. How tall is Danny Kerr?
He's grown.
I don't care, literally.
5'8", 5'7", I don't know. Whatever.
But, close game?
Yeah, it wasn't the best game, that.
It was okay, it was okay. You know, it's quite hard. They lose Kempisi early on. Malander comes on. I think his best position is 15.
So do I. I thought he looked really good. A couple of his offloads were lovely. Mm. Out the side there, beautiful. I thought he looked great. One thing I worry about with Harry Malander is his hair.
I know what you mean. I mean, what was it doing the weekend?
He's a lovely fella.
It was a bit like something from Greece, wasn't it?
Yeah. See, I've got a friend that works at the RFU, and he couldn't work out, his name's Baz, and he couldn't work out if Harry Malander looked like Patrick Swayze or Deirdre Barlow. And for me, it's not Swayze, it's more Barlow, and that worries me. And Monday to Friday, after training with a bit of product in it, or on a Saturday neat, it probably looks very different. But I think when I see him, I will give him a little tap on the shoulder and have a word with the lad, with the boy Malander.
So often you get teams like Harlequins that scored Northampton, 2-1. It's not often that a team scores less tries and wins.
Fewer tries.
Yeah, fewer tries than it, but Dan Bigger, 5 penalties. He's so good off the tee.
He is, and he was great under the high ball. I love this one, high. But he hasn't had the greatest start the last first two games.
No, he does miss.
Haven't been great yet.
He does miss Jamie Lang for his try. Good pace though from Lang, but he just slips off him. But head on tackling though, he's so good. He goes quite high.
Yeah.
But because he hits with a lot of power. And like,
did you see him hit Banahan last week?
Yeah.
Yeah, strong. He's a tough boy.
He is a tough boy. He's very tough. But he does go quite high. You don't often see him tackling that low around the waist. But he's solid. And he's got a lot of power behind him. So, you know, he ends up stopping a lot of the...
Yeah, he didn't have his best game. But he's good off the tee. Good under the high ball. And he will really get there for Saints, I think. But something I really enjoyed was the direct running of David Ribbons in the second row. And Courtney Laws. Courtney a bit more footwork. But Ribbons, just a big, powerful man. And he runs ideally at arms, but sometimes at bodies, and he just goes and goes and goes, and he properly makes dents. And it's almost like, I've said this on, it might be on the highlights tonight, it's Monday now, I don't know if I'm repeating myself or not, I lose track, but you see so many forwards standing at first receiver now, doing that whole thing where they pull the ball back behind two decoys.
Yeah.
And it's great, it really works when it's done right. But sometimes I do watch guys doing that, and I think, what is the point in you being in the gym for 4, 5, 6 hours a week and eating all you eat if all you're going to do is stand and pass? At some point, steam onto the ball. No one steams onto it anymore, you know?
The important thing there is that you're getting the right players in the right positions for that, because you know what it's like. Some guys are better handling balls than others. So, for instance, someone like Mako Vinopola is a very good ball handler, so you want him in that first position. You know, there's no point having someone who isn't comfortable passing, because the whole point of that move is that you take it flat. If you do it deep, if you pass too early, it's so easy to move off, and it ruins the entire flow of the game or flow of the move. So whoever's taking that ball, it's about getting in the right position, and then you want your big runner then next to you, because the option is always to pass.
But that's not, I get that, I agree, obviously I wouldn't disagree with that, but my point is, if I'm playing against Mako Vunipola, do I want him, I'm not saying he does, it's just the example you brought up,
yep,
do I want him continually standing at first receiver and throwing a pass, or do I want him steaming onto the ball? No, I'll take him standing and passing, please.
Yeah, I mean, that's the balance you want, isn't it? Because that's why you hold defenders, because they think you're going to take it on.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think it does get to a point now where a lot of players just stand and give, or if they're not standing and giving. A lot of big forwards now, because of the need for footworks, if you run straight in, you often get buried. I think a lot of forwards now taking the ball, take the ball, start effectively standing still and begin footwork once they've caught the ball. And the players that don't do that really, really stand out. So when Mike Williams is at it for Leicester, he just steams in. And Jono Ross for Sale just steams in. And what it means is you get Don Armand will steam in. It's because you get proper momentum because they're a rare breed. It's like actually you don't. But sometimes, Dave, footwork, yeah, sometimes just whack it in.
You do have to be quite brave to do that as well, though. Because you know you're going to get hit. And this is similar with, say, a strike runner in the back. So like a 13, a winger, or a 15. You want them hitting the line, and to be able to hit the line you have to be running at full pace. There's so many players that wait until the ball's in the hand before they start sprinting. Whilst you look at someone like a good example from my playing days would be like Lee Byrne. The wide angles he hit, you knew that when the ball's in his hand he's running through the ball. He's not waiting until he catches it to sprint. He's hitting the line and he's at full pace. It makes a huge difference.
I tell you who used to steam into contact was Francois Pienaar at Sarries, remember?
Yeah.
When he caught it. He used to absolutely steam it.
Abdel Benazi as well.
And Abdullah, jeepers, whatever Abdel did, he did what he wanted, to be honest. He was just stronger than everyone else.
I always like watching Tom Collins playing for Northampton.
Yeah.
Just completely different, isn't he?
I reckon he's as hard to play against as George North was for Northampton.
Yeah, possibly.
Difficult to play against.
But Marcus Smith looked good covering back. He looks like he's putting a little bit of weight. Not so much up top, but around that
glutamus. Arse legs. Yeah.
Glutamus maximus area. He's definitely been
Glutamus Maximus Aurelius. He looks good. He's got a lovely big bum on him, I'll say that.
He's been going below 90.
Quinns, I thought, showed a lot of, at last season there were times where you watched them and you think, I know the lads' heart rates are still high and they're still making tackles, but they're not in this, they're gone. They never looked like they were just flat out defeated in that game. They kept battling. But Northampton, I thought, looked decent actually.
Game of the weekend though for me was Bath Gloucester.
Oh.
31 all.
Oh.
Gloucester 21-7 half time. They've started so well.
21-0 after half an hour.
Yeah.
Boy. Just crazy time. I'm on a WhatsApp group with
Gloucester boys, yeah.
Gloucester boys, and the chat is funny. Like there's no you know, like if you're four fans and some of you are Bath fans and Gloucester fans, you're bantering each other. But we're just like, oh my God, what is happening here? And I was like, when it was 21-0 down, I said to the boys, they were like, predicted score. I said 35-21 to Bath, you know, just as a joke. And it obviously wasn't that, but it wasn't all that far off. Like,
what I will say is I like the balance of the Gloucester team. It works. You know, you've got 12 trees and Trinder. I think that combination works. You've got a guy at 12 who... 12 Tree's a big bloke. He'll hit angles, he'll take it up, he'll also be a distributor. Then you've got Trinder.
And he can kick.
You've got Trinder next to him, who is a strike runner, who wants to not take on people really head on. You know, he'll use footwork to get around the outside of him. Sharples, Banahan, two different wingers. Woodward at 15.
Class.
Brilliant. Cipriani just running the show at 10. It's just a team that looks already settled, I think,
yeah.
and the combinations work.
But what I would say to you, Tom, is if Cipriani doesn't play, there is a huge gulf in attacking threat, attacking creativity and threat between him and anyone else.
Yeah, they don't
at
have
Gloucester, respectfully, who might play 10. That's one issue, but you can't really. There's no reason, you know. That's no reason to panic. I also think without Val Rapava Ruskin, they are a significantly less dominant forward pack. He is quite something. He really is quite something. Very, very strong. Really good over the ball. Really good close quarter carrying. Really dominant close quarter hits. And when he went off, it's one of those things. A prop goes off, fat boy goes off. Oh well, get another one on. They were not the same without him. They were not the same.
With Wasps last year, if Cipriani didn't play, you know, you had Gopeth or you had Eastman, didn't you?
Yeah.
But you're right though. And if he doesn't play.
Yeah, I mean, there are still really good players at Gloucester.
Yeah, they are,
but he's just so good.
That pass for the Banahan try.
Right, let's have it. Shot to nothing or skillful?
Both.
Yes.
Completely. I still think the pass the previous game was better, but that was absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, you've got advantage. It's a blind pass, but so is last week's. It was incredible amount of skill. I don't think it was great defending from Cognacina. Just sort of shoots out the line, doesn't really take anyone, ends up just running up the pass, beats him, goes over his head. Whilst I think last week the pass was just inch perfect.
It was, but there was still a defender too tight though.
Yeah, a little bit too tight, but that's why I think last week's pass was better. But it was, what a finish as well.
Yeah, and lovely finish, but also, you know, it's one of those things that people, the haters, are saying it's a shot to nothing, it's not skill, we had nothing to lose. Okay, but no one else is doing it. So is it that easy? I don't see anyone else doing that. You know, I see a lot of people not doing much when they got a shot to nothing. So, and it's difficult because you want to fly up on Cipriani because you give him space, you're knackered, but the people are flying up on him, he's getting a millisecond and he's carving you apart. So when he's in this sort of form, it's painful. I didn't, however, think it was the best fly half performance of the weekend. We'll move on to that in a sec. But in that Bath Gloucester game, I was talking with Chris Foy from the Mail yesterday up at Sale, and he was saying it almost felt like Sam Underhill pulled them back single-handedly into that game. And we had both agreed it wasn't single-handedly. Some other guys played well. I thought Jackson Willison played really well at 13, actually. But he was really fiery. But Underhill was fantastic. And there's a lot of good sevens in England now. The whole, we haven't got an out-and-out seven. There's about 350 of them now. And, well, there's three or four. But I think he's as good as any of them. Cressick's in great form, but I think Underhill is in similar form. I thought he was just really, really dominant at key moments and fully fit, top player, super powerful, super aggressive, lovely technique. Really enjoyed watching him, and without him I think that wouldn't have been a draw, that.
Really?
No, well, I think Bath lost that. I think he was, at key times, he was fantastic. So, yeah, enjoyed that game. I watched it on the sofa in my pants. Don't get to watch many games like that. It's quite nice, actually.
Lovely sight, that. Saracens Bristol, Liam Williams scoring hat-trick off the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't really have to work that hard for him.
No, but he still scored a hat-trick, yeah, so he's your team of the week, isn't he?
Yeah. Nice of him to get back, though, in the team.
Billy back on his feet and scoring, looking light on his feet. Big Bill, nice, like it. Will Skelton is ridiculous. He's lost 14 stone and he's still 33 stone.
Do you agree with Bristol resting all their players?
Yep.
Second game in?
Yep. Completely. Target games you think you can win, they got to survive, that's it. Don't be heroes. Don't put your top players out for what will very, very likely be a loss at Saracens, a hard-fought loss on a surface that doesn't necessarily agree with older legs like our foes and those types.
I do agree with that, but I just find it a little bit strange it's only two games in. I mean, you shouldn't be that fatigued two games into the season.
I don't think they were finished.
I'm finished.
Oh, you're finished, you're so full of it.
And especially when you're trying to build partnerships and trying to build a team, and the only way you do that is by playing together. So, I mean, I do agree with target games, 100%, but you've also got to play as a team together and work out which combinations work and which don't.
But in terms of the fatigue point, have you finished now?
Yeah.
Right, all right. So, I don't think they were not picked because they were fatigued. I think they were not picked, so they're not fatigued 6 months from now. Or less fatigued 6 months from now. And I think it's wise and completely wise. And in terms of the partnerships, agree with that. Can't argue with that. But they've only had a week off. They're back together Friday night against Gloucester. So
6 months from now, though, this game is going to be irrelevant. It's not going to be...
No, it's not, boy. It's often. It comes down to the last few games of the season. And
They're not going to be like, oh, God, I feel so much fresher now. I missed one game.
No, but it's all cumulative. It's like, that's like, you know, it may be really, really important. They may have... What if someone had got injured? I think they were never going to win that game.
Okay, so...
I think it's good management.
Talking point of this game is the George Smith hit on Jackson Ray.
Oh, yeah, dirty bugger. And then...
Ooh.
Dirty lover.
They're the hardest ones, aren't they? When someone comes from out to win, you can't see him, you don't brace yourself, really. Takes you by surprise.
Battered him.
Goes high.
Battered him.
Goes too high. But... And we've got... We might have different opinions on this. I've not seen... a conclusive angle that says to me that hits his jaw or his head. I think personally it hits the top of his shoulder. If you hit round the jaw and if you hit round the head, you don't get the head jerked back and forward like that. That's like a car crash. That's like a whiplash. You get that when you hit up top. You don't get that when you hit your jaw. You get that, your legs just go from beneath you. So it's difficult because I can't see conclusive evidence that hits his jaw. So for me, he goes high, no doubt about that, but it's a yellow card.
Your head's gone.
Yeah.
You've lost the plot, mate.
Yeah.
It's because you had that kid.
I got baby brain already.
Baby brain, our kid.
So
we're doing the highlights yesterday at sale, and Durders says, right, we can talk about the sale, the Saracens Bristol game. I'm going to just say, you know, you're going to give an opinion on the George Smith red card. Either way, I said, what's your view? And he goes, oh, definite red. I said, well, I said to the producer, all I'm going to say is that from the angles I've seen, I can't make my mind up because the angles weren't good enough. The camera work, the angles weren't there.
No.
So I hate, and you don't want me to say that because it's not an opinion. I want to give an opinion. As you well know, I like giving opinions, but and it's going to look crap for the TV show. Unless we've got another angle, I'm going to say, dunno.
Yes.
So can you produce another angle? 2 minutes later, the producer showed me a different angle on WhatsApp, directly behind George Smith, almost from like the Bristol try line. 100% shoulder, and it's the one that the TMO gave. They called it the killer shot, is what the TMO said to the ref, and the ref's here. Killer shot, right, first of all, it's no arms, brutally aggressive. It's shoulder, straight in the jaw, definite red. And you know I don't like reds for red's sake. 100% red, easy call, absolutely no question.
Okay.
In my opinion, IMHO.
Yeah, what's your opinion, guys, girls? Let us know. Might put a poll.
I put a poll.
We did one. I did one last week. Who would look worse?
Oh yeah,
on a desert island. Yeah, I can't believe I lost.
What do you mean you can't believe it?
Well, you know, I'm chiselled. I'm cut. I've got muscles in the right places.
Yeah, but I can bench 240 kilos. I can't. I wish I could.
I think it's just like the ginger gene in me, and the hair.
That fella over there is a fella walking his dog. A little wee stop at the services. He's got one of those rogue T-shirts on, which is like CrossFit addict T-shirt, isn't it?
Doesn't look like he does CrossFit.
I don't think he does CrossFit.
I think Lewinton is going to be an absolute incredible signing for Saracens.
Someone's nicked his ass.
I have to say that.
Yeah, he's going to score bucket load, isn't he?
He is. He scored bucket load for London Irish last year, and
yeah, he's going to score loads.
They struggled really all year.
lovely player.
Wasps Exeter at the Rico.
Yeah,
the Slade Show. Sladey and Simmons.
In short, Tommy.
In short.
What are your views?
In short, they had Searle at 10. They're really going to struggle to replace Cipriani. Gopeth's out as well, which is just like a double whammy.
Yeah.
And Searle,
and Kyle's left.
Yeah. Searle looked all right at 10 to start with.
Yeah,
he puts a lovely kick through for Bassett Sweets to score. But just throws such an obvious intercept to Slade. You know, that's an experience for you. You know, you
get all flaffs do it sometimes.
They all do it, that's for sure. But that one was just—it was just too flat. You know, you can't throw long passes like that when you're flat like that.
Tom, we've all thrown an intercept in a big game. Have you? Have you? Have you?
Yeah, probably have.
Have I? No. Ask me.
Have you?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah, mate.
Who?
France A against England A. About 2000, 2001, down the south of France. We were doing all right. We were going to win. I was up against Nicolas Mast, ended up having a slightly better career than me. And I threw a lovely loop pass over the top in our 22. And this absolute nobody called Damien Try picked it off and scored under the post and they won.
Did he score a try, did he?
He literally did. And he lived up to it.
Were you better passing off the right or left?
Right to left.
Okay.
I once, playing at the Rec, got the ball and I knew, I looked up and I wasn't a brilliant passer. I'm not pretending I was crap, but if I caught it, there was a chance I could also pass it. I knew it was on. I knew that their right winger, I was out on the left, and I knew their right winger was going to hit in on me because he was shouting, I've got Flatman. Regardless, he was obviously didn't take it too seriously, so he's not going to catch it anyway. I got the ball, did a Cipriani and whipped it over the top, missed pass, and I heard banners go, I think it was, there was an F word in there, effing, no, yes, straight over the top, trying the corner. Sorry about that.
Was it a good confidence boost when someone's shouting your name, saying, I've got Flatman.
I honestly think.
Like you're a threat.
I honestly think they were having a laugh. I think they were laughing to each other, and then they actually were like, oh my God, he's, for the first time and only time in his whole career, he's done us there. I think they were laughing, because they knew
I did love Daly's footwork for his try.
Yeah, beautiful, isn't it?
But his pace and his pickup.
It's like his step accelerates him.
He's such a balanced runner. So is Slade as well. And Slade scored two at the weekend. But you forget actually how fast Henry Slade is.
I didn't know he was that quick.
No.
I'll tell you what, in short, Tommy.
You've got Christian Wade chasing him as well. And
Elliot Daly.
He's probably the fastest bloke I know.
Fast bloke in school, that's for sure. Mm. In short, Tom, I think Wasp started well, banging Exeter about a bit. Exeter never panicked, and in the end, Wasp were too easy to score against. Slade, the intercept, fine, but he shouldn't ghost around Shields. And I think it was Lover Balliver. Could be wrong. I haven't checked it. I watched it, but I've forgotten. Outside Shields, he shouldn't ghost through and score a run in from 50 like that. And you driving lineouts.
Standard Exeter, though. Driving lineouts, pick and go.
Find a way to win.
They're just class at that. You've got so much confidence in them that when they do get 5 metres out, they're going to come away with something.
Yeah.
Because they don't make mistakes. You see so many people and so many teams picking and going, losing the ball, not concentrating on picking it up, knocking it on. All of them are comfortable in that situation. And they just, the patience as well. They don't force it. They keep going and going and going.
But you're defending driving lineouts is very difficult. But it is possible. And once them all gets going, I agree, it is hard to stop. But I think very often, even at Premiership level, it's made too easy, and internationally, it's made too easy for teams to score from driving lineouts and firstly win it in the air. But if you don't win it in the air, it's not just about pushing as hard as you can and having a good crack at it. It's about being properly organised and having systems. And, you know, I'm not saying that I was a legend at it or anything like that, but I was lucky in that sense that I played in the same team as Steve Borthwick for a decade and Danny Grewcott, which meant we had a huge focus on line-out and set piece. So our scrum was generally very good. Not always, of course. Sometimes you get done over. But generally very good. Our line-out was generally very good on our ball and their ball. Now, when teams are going to drive against us, we absolutely had systems that we learned and practiced and practiced and practiced. And it is a lot
but
of
is,
work.
Is defending a driving line-out, is that something you can replicate in training? Because a lot of stuff you can't. So, like, my point is, 3v2 or a 2v1 in training is easy. But when you're absolutely fatigued.
Yep.
And the only way you really get fatigued is by playing a game.
Yep.
Can you replicate that in training?
Yeah, line out more defence, one of the easiest things to replicate. You just need two teams and A's against B's, chip on your shoulder. But also you'd say it's harder.
But in games, teams are desperate to score. You know, whilst in training, are you desperate to score?
Tommy, at forward session on a Tuesday morning at Bath.
Love when you call me Tommy.
Right, go. And you've got, right, that's the first team from last weekend. This is the boys who weren't playing last weekend. We're announcing the team after lunch today. But before that, we're doing live scrums and live lineouts. So let's see who wants it. That's it, right? It's all you need. Then you're at game intensity then. You're flat out. You're scrapping because you can chin people in training and not get sent off. You're flat out into it. But it's all, I would say, we trained so hard at line-out defence that a lot, not always, but a lot of the time it felt easier in games. So we were training against, I'm trying to split, for example, we had systems and I had to get my heads in certain places and my job was written down for me. So both of us knew everyone's job. My head had to go in between this guy and this guy when they do this, this guy and this guy when they do this, and you have to split them.
So what is your job as a prop defending the driving line-out? Because sure, so one person would probably stay up on their feet, wouldn't they, to try and get their hands on the ball?
Yeah, they would, but what you're trying to do is, so, oh, we got time on a pod, haven't we? We can talk about it. What I'm trying to do,
well,
say,
where else do you think we were?
I know, I'm thinking we're on TV, you only got 20 seconds, but
sat in a car.
No, but you know what I mean. On telly, I can't do any detail, and you get used to not doing any detail. But if I'm in between, say I'm in the, I used to go in the middle of the line out, so I could try and stick my head in everywhere. So if you're at the front, you often end up, we used to call it getting half pregnant, so you don't quite know whether to go in or go out, and it's like,
well, you have to stay for the front peel or anything.
Yeah,
goes
but
on.
Actually, you're better off leaving someone A, more agile there, and B, you're better off having someone who's really good at pushing in the middle.
And that's why you get lots of scrum halves.
Yeah, because scrum halves can tackle well these days and whatever. But it was, so I was in the middle. So my job is to get the lifters away from that jumper, so that Gruey or Borthers can get their arms around that jumper and rip him backwards and get towards that ball. Now, if he's protected because he's got guys all around him and he can post that ball back easily to the guy who's coming in to take it because his lifters haven't been split and we've got no access to their ball, then it's easy. And then you find out Gruey or Borthers will just be over the top. We used to call it pushing with your tits, basically standing up straight trying to push them all back. Doesn't work.
No.
You want everyone in good position. So if they're going to be standing up, which they are, my job was to give them one guy holding a ball to attack. So my job was to remove a lifter so they didn't have to get past the lifter to get to the jumper.
Yeah.
They had come with me through the hole. So that's how you get your cauliflower ears, basically. You get ripped through those holes. And it heads inside and underneath. So every time I see someone standing upright, useless. Every time I see someone driving in at the side of a mall, useless. If you can see someone's number sticking up in the air,
yeah,
they ain't doing it right, as a rule. Not always, but you need to be splitting people apart Otherwise, what you do is you push on the outside. And you see top pros do it all the time. And I will have done it 100 times. Of course I would. But you're basically driving as hard as you can. What you're effectively doing is compressing the opposition wall for them, making it tighter and tighter for them. You've got loads of lads standing off. People don't know whether the standoff will come in. You should know that stuff. You should put work into it. You should know exactly where you need to be every time the opposition drives front, middle or back.
But it's also to do with timing as well, because sometimes you get lineups that go up, down pretty quickly. Some are slower. So because you obviously can't hit till the jumper comes back down his feet. But I think what we're trying to get out here, the point is that it's not just about eight men putting their head down and pushing. It's a lot more technical than that, because there are the change of point of contact of drives. It is slip around the front, it is slip around the side. It's very difficult, and you're right though, it does need a lot of practice.
It seems like a lot of teams put a lot of time into practicing their driving mauls, which is great. But what you're doing is, if you're not putting the same amount of time into splitting, disrupting, disintegrating, smashing opposition drives, what's happening is you are effectively going in as an unorganised rabble versus an organised pack. So you are going to lose as many, if not more, than you win. So our point was, yes, we want to be super organised, but we want to be more organised on their ball than them, and more organised on our ball than them, and more organised on their ball. That was the point.
I love Wasps. I love watching them play. They're one of my favourite teams, but I just think they are hugely going to miss Cipriani, Eastman. I think they're going to miss Haskell, and I think they're going to miss Guy Thompson.
I think that's a good point. I hadn't thought about Guy Thompson, and I think you might be right. That might be a key one.
Just quickly, because we're rambling on a bit, good to see Manu Tuilagi back, running in space. Yeah. And we spoke on the phone just before we come online, and he mentioned about one of the reasons why he looked so good at the weekend was his partnership with Kyle Eastman.
No, for me, it's no coincidence that Manu suddenly looks twice as good and Kyle Eastman's at 12. I know he didn't play the whole game, but you've got George Ford, who takes it properly flat. First of all, the pack were great, put him on the front foot. George Ford takes it properly flat, superbly skilled. He was the best fly half at the weekend, I thought, in my opinion, by the way. Across the whole match, he was great. He looked really good. George Ford takes it really flat to the line, makes late, accurate decisions. Then outside him, you've got Kyle Eastman, who does exactly the same. You've almost got two George Fords in there, two proper players.
Yeah.
And then you've got a beast at 13. It works really nicely. So it's not, if you send Manu, don't care how big he is, you send Manu into brick walls, lads can tackle now. He ain't going to rip through. He still needs holes like everyone else. Kyle makes them and puts the ball in them just as well as George Ford
rugby
does.
Rugby union really suits, I think, rugby league converts now, especially the ball players in rugby league, because you see that so many times now. It's such a common play, isn't it? You know, putting the ball behind two dummy runners or a dummy runner. You get that sometimes two or three times going across the pitch in one phase of play. And that's where someone like Kyle Eastman is so good. You know, someone like Danny Cipriani, I reckon, if ever he wanted to go to rugby league, would pick up straight away.
Yeah, Carver.
Because
it's
so similar now, especially on phase play. Again, Gonova looked good, ghosting around the outside.
Is Gonova the best winger in the league? I think I might have said so on the telly.
I think he is as well.
God, what a player. But Talusa Vianu is just absolute class. All right, he's better in attack and defence. But you see how Gonova just leaves him for dead for his try. I mean, it's just like he's a big man who moves better than a well-moving little man. Does that even make sense? Anyway, he's good, isn't he?
I think it does make sense, mate.
Yeah.
Glasgow 2 from 2 in the Pro 14.
Hang on a minute, you've missed out Sale against Worcester.
We can't pick up every single game.
All I'm saying is, Jono Ross, really good.
Yeah.
And Rob Webber was really good, I thought. A hooker, very good.
Was he?
Yeah, very, very good. I tend to think he always
is,
actually.
Barbecues. Glasgow, again, 2 from 2. Stuart Hogg played the first game of the season. I mean, often you don't get that. Often your internationals, you wouldn't get an island, put it that way. Your internationals sort of come midway through September, getting ready for European games. But phenomenal player.
Yeah, your mate, isn't he? Your golfing mate, isn't he?
Pure class.
Yeah. Would he get in the England team? Yes.
Yes, he would.
Would he get in the Welsh team?
Yes.
Would he get in the Irish team?
Yes.
Would he get in the French team?
Yes.
Would he get in the Italian team?
Oh, I don't know.
Would he get in, hang on, would he get in the Australian team over Israel Folau?
Good one, I'm not sure.
Would he get in the All Blacks team over our kid?
He wouldn't be far off either of them.
Would he get in Springbok? Would he get in Springbok?
I'll tell you what is a shock. Benetton, 2 from 2.
You've been saying they're crap for the last 40 years.
I know.
You think they should be disbanded?
That actually proved me wrong, which I like. But
you don't, you hate it.
Benvenuti, such an athlete.
You're welcome.
Such an athlete for Italy. He's been playing the centre, just dominates. You've got Negre, you've got... He didn't play at the weekend, but you've
Negre
got...
Didn't.
No, Negre did. Who's the flanker? Zani didn't play, but... He's been really good from Tomasi Allen. They're looking like a good looking like a real good team this year.
I'd love it if they were. It'd be potentially way more fun if they are, let's face it.
Potentially the Conor O'Shea factor. Ulster winning again. John Cooney kicking him to victory, kicked him the week before.
Mm.
Just signed a 3-year contract.
Good on him.
Yeah, but what a try by Gilroy as well.
Trouser in that dough.
Yeah.
Good on him.
But that's it really.
You're playing golf with Laurie Cantor soon, aren't you?
I am.
Bath local pro. He's our local pro hero. You're playing golf with him. Can I drive the buggy? I want to come for the lads' bands, but I can't play
you
golf.
You won't come. You won't come.
It's right in my house.
How embarrassing would it be if I beat him as well? I'll play off scratch. It's fine.
Matt Banahan said that Laurie's not very good. He's overrated. He's just apparently got a rich dad who pays him to go around the world playing golf.
Just kill him with chat, can't you? Easy.
You didn't say that, by the way.
Just like undoing your glove. It's Velcro glove on the backswing.
Cantor's the name, is it? Anyway.
Right, we've got to do some questions. I know this is a long pod, but I'm just getting gnawed to death by Ian Goodwin. Just every week says, oh, you haven't asked my question. You haven't answered my question.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Let's have a look at him.
You can't really see him. He looks...
Let's have a look at him.
He's in the woods.
He's in the rough, man.
I think he's a golfer. Or he likes golf.
Right. What's his question? Is that good, Gooders? What is it?
Is it fair that to get a Lions test ticket officially, you have to buy a holiday to go with it?
Oh, my God.
I know. This is my point about why we don't...
Mate.
...answer his questions.
Ian. Is it Ian?
Well, it's
Ian. Come on, mate.
I mean, why would you not spell Ian, I-A-N? Why would you spell it I-A?
I think while we're at it, we should discuss the Irish Rugby Football Union's ticket pricing structures. Ian, come on, mate. This is good times.
He did have another question, though.
We don't do actual information. Did he?
Yeah.
Did he?
I'm sure he did.
Ken Dodd died yesterday. Did he? Did he have a good one?
What rule would you change from Ian Godwin?
Oh, God.
How long have you got?
What
would you change, mate?
I'd make it illegal for... Is it Goodwin or Godwin?
Goodwin.
I'd make it illegal for Ian Goodwin by law to tweet us any more questions.
I would change the law that you... couldn't wind down a clock by scrummaging and collapse scrummages. It should somehow
stop.
We should, yeah, until the ball is out to play.
I would not allow anyone to be substituted until they're falling over and losing control of their bowels. How's that?
Yeah, good one. Right, some other questions. Who is the best lord? Rings, flies or dance?
Tyndall. Next question.
Did you ever read Lord of the Flies?
I can't read.
No, I didn't. Was it good?
Didn't you just remind me of Piggy?
Did it look like the Rock in the book, did he?
He had to use his glasses to make fire. Nearly killed him. Harry Shawyer, favourite popcorn, sweet or salty?
Oh, sweet. Sweet.
Like Stu Brumhill. Yeah, sweet as well.
Brummers.
Sensible question. If you were still playing today, which coach / DOR would you most like to work with?
We've had the biggest budgets, really, isn't it? Best team trips, biggest salary. That's you all over, isn't it? I didn't care about that. I just played because I loved it.
Social, you would. I always think, from looking on the outside, I always think Exeter have such a great team morale, and someone like that would really attract me to the club, because you have to enjoy yourself off the field, and you have to have a good social scene. All teams get on, but there just seems something special always going on at Exeter.
And I think they're just all allowed to completely be themselves, even though they're all a bit different. And
some of them are just plain weird, like Jack Knoll. But I, yep, Chiefs, Rob Baxter, Ali Heifer, I happen to know from the old days, is a really, really good guy and really, really bright guy. You don't need your coach to be your best friend, but it does help if you really like them and if you respect them and admire them for being hardworking and bright. That does make a difference, and Ali Heifer is one of those guys. So Surrey seems like a great environment, so does Chiefs.
Hello fellas, Matt from Dorset here. Got a question for Shanks. Is it true that you and Dylan Armitage used to have a podcast, but it got canned after one series because it was absolutely toilet?
What's that about?
Thanks, Matt from Dorset.
Proper job. What's that about?
Why are you putting on a funny voice, just in case?
You're not ringing the golf club, mate.
Someone recognises you.
Weirdo.
Yeah.
Is that true? You have a podcast with Dylan Armitage?
Let's hear another one, shall we?
Jesus. Okay, go on then.
Hello there, this is Jacob from Wantage in Oxfordshire, and I've got a joke for you. What does an extractor fan sound like? I used to like tractors, but I don't know more.
What is it? Why are we attracting, like, middle, upper-class people? Like Jacob?
I think we might have to reassess what we view to be our demographic.
I mean, there are quite a lot on here.
Can you find some
rude ones as well? We'll have a look for a...
Let's try and find a good one now.
Let's find a decent one. Come on.
Hang on, 2 seconds.
The lad is born with just a head. Nothing but a head. And he gets to his 18th birthday. His dad says, right, you're 18. I'm going to take you to the pub. So he carries the head, puts him on the bar, gives him a beer. His body grows back. Give me another. His arms grow back. Give me another. His legs grow back. He's a little bit drunk. He runs outside and gets run over by a van. A barman says, oh no, he should have stopped while he was a head.
That's better.
Yeah.
That is better. That's good.
Well done, Lucas from Burnley. You saved the show there.
He did actually. And did he send us a couple? There's a few of them. They were good, but a bit blue. We like blue, we just can't play them.
There's been a few blue ones. Difference between marmalade and jam.
Yeah, that was a West Country voice.
Yeah, sounds well like done. Phil Vickery.
Yeah, I think it was Vicks, yeah.
But yeah, we're getting a few jokes and texts through. Can you stop calling me as well, please? Because I won't answer.
It's a burner, bro. It's a burner.
I've had two WhatsApp calls already.
It wasn't a joke, but we did get a very revealing message about Freddie Burns from someone, didn't we, who knows someone that he used to know.
A girl he used to date with initials LG.
Can't say that bit. Oh, you said it now. Oh, well. And, you know, some sort of dietary preferences of Freddie's. Anyway.
She made TVs. Or she makes TVs.
Yeah, life's good. Anyway.
But anyway, keep sending them. I mean, we've set the bar pretty low, and that's down to you. Sure, there's more funny stories out there. Don't be afraid. You know, you will get a mention.
Don't be afraid.
We'll make you famous.
Goodbye, everybody.
That was
Hannibal Lecter. Yeah.
Ooh, Jinx.
Jinx again.
Crap.